What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a sleeper.
Join our league of clean energy at Graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
All right, so we'll await word. I don't know how soon it's going to come down. I think it's going to be probably a week before the Lions name who the next offensive coordinator is going to be. But they lose Ben Johnson to the Bears. It sucks. Going to the Bears, that's not where anybody wanted him to go. You know, if you want to wish him good luck and all that and wish him well, but not with the Bears. I suspect he's going to have the Bears offense going pretty good. I don't know what to expect from the rest of the team. I don't know what kind of head coach he's going to be, but I think as an offensive mind, he's a very good offensive mind. And you've heard me say all year that I think the Bears have a lot to work with offensively. As far as Ben Johnson's concerned with that team, you know, will he be on the same page with the front office? Will they see eye to eye enough to be able to build the team up, much like what was done here in Detroit? We know the success here with the Lions is because of the like minds that they have, not only with Dan Campbell and Brad Holmes, but also with the full vision of what is expected from Sheila Ford Hamp, Chris Spielman, Rod Wood, and others in the organization. And that's how things work. Lots of give and take, and look, it's worked here. I'm not wishing success on the Bears. I won't do that. I can't do that. I was like Kang. I was hoping he was going to go to the Raiders, start all anew. Who know what they were going to do with the quarterback situation there? And but obviously for him, it's a good situation to go to with Chicago with what they have offensively.
Yeah, I mean, they got good players on the field, especially on the offensive side of the ball with the quarterback. Solid defense, so I get that from a football perspective. I'm a little surprised because off the field, the front office doesn't seem like they really know what they're doing, which is why I'm really surprised they got Ben Johnson, because I think that is the right move. But I don't know if he's really aligned with them as he says he needed to be with his next job. You know, he's saying he wanted to be aligned with the GM and the president, and maybe he is, you know, and that's why he took the job, or maybe... That, along with the $13 million that's reported out there, $13 million a year, is hard to turn down. And that's all guaranteed for coaches. So he signs that contract, that money's in his bank, or it's going to be in his bank.
Yeah, that's big money, and you can understand leaving the fold here for $13 million. A reported $13 million a year is massive for a first-year coach. Let's go back to the phones. Ned is in Oxford. Ned, welcome to 97 on the Ticket. Hey, Ned.
Hey, Gator. Remember that from Scary Movie?
Well, I remember that from the Budweiser commercials, too. What's up?
What's up, King? Hey, okay, so really quick, you were talking about the weather earlier. Pope Francis Center downtown Hancock Street has a emergency shelter set up for anybody who needs that. So,
great to hear that.
Pope Francis Center, they have emergency shelter, Hancock Street, Detroit. I'm bummed out, man. I'm super bummed out. I can't believe that. I guess this is kind of the beauty and the drawback of football, right, is it's one and done. And the topic kind of all day has been, where does the blame go? And I don't think you could just blame one person, or I don't think there's like a ton of blame to go around when you suffer the injuries that we've suffered this year. Like, it's a miracle that we won 15 games, and, you know, we did a lot of that after Hutch went out, what was it, week 6 against Dallas. That was kind of the start of it, and it's just kind of slowly progressed, and Jared Goff is known to have stinker games. Look at the Bucks game this year. Look at, you know,
the Bills happens. Game. He's not perfect. He's definitely got some flaws, but you know, he's also a very good quarterback.
Exactly. And that's the thing, is that, you know, the question always, is he your guy? Yeah, Jared Goff's my guy. I mean, is he my dream? Is he my dream team? You know, 96 Olympics, you know, quarterback? No, not necessarily. I'd probably pick Josh Allen. But, you know, he is what he is, and he's good enough to get the job done. You just hope that, you just hope that those stinker games don't come, you know, in the divisional round against, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate when it happened, because obviously it's the worst time to have a bad game.
Exactly, and that's all you can do. And what else can we do as fans? Is like, we could get on them, we could harp, and we could talk about the injuries and stuff. But I'm kind of with Dan Campbell, man. It's like, all right, you had your, you know, a couple days. Let's not sulk. Let's get back to work, because we still have a good team. You know, we just made history as a franchise, all over the books. And there's always next year.
All right. Thanks, Ned. I appreciate the call. And, you know, that's what they're looking at. And now it's next year. To think that the defense was going to be able to keep playing at this ridiculously high level despite they had the injuries, I mean, you're hanging on a thread there. I keep referring to this as it's a game of Jenga. When Robertson got hurt on the second defensive play for the Lions, when he breaks his upper arm, which is strange to break in the humerus bone, but when he breaks that arm and comes out of the game, you pulled that last Jenga piece out, and it just comes crumbling down. It was too much.
And that's why I put more of the, you know, the pie chart blame on the defense than Jared Goff, even though Jared Goff did not have a good game. But I just think in the end, what the Lions were doing the entire year was kind of a mirage in a way, you know? But they made us believe, because they kept doing it. They kept doing the next man up, and they kept scheming their way, and they kept finding a way to win. But in reality, this was always a real possibility where the dam was going to break eventually. And it broke when Robertson got hurt. It was like, hey, this is too much. They game plan for a man coverage, blitz, all this stuff type of game, and their number one cover corner gets hurt right away.
Yeah,
right away.
I went through,
they're not going to change the game plan at that point.
I went through before the quick turn of events at where it was. Lions got down. They scored to make it 31-28 in the fourth quarter, or in the third quarter. And then Washington comes down. It's a 4th-and-2. And the Lions have 12 men on the field. You can't do that. It can't happen. And that's not on the defense. That's not on the offense. That's on Dan Campbell and the coaching staff. If you recognize you got 12 guys on the field and somehow somebody, because you can see the guys on the coaching staff on the sideline going up and down, call timeout. And they didn't. That's on them. Now, would they still have gotten a stop on 4th-and-2? I don't know, but I'd like the chances.
You'd like to see him try, at least.
Exactly.
And instead they just gifted him a first down.
Instead they gifted first down, they score a couple plays later. And then the next drive for the Lions to answer that, as now they're down by 10, is the Jamison Williams pass that he should never have thrown. And if you're going to throw it out of bounds, or just tuck and run. He didn't. He tried to make something happen. And now you turn the ball over, you give up another score, and everything's out. Now it's out of whack. Now it's you're not going to come back from this. And that's where the game got lost. And then it becomes a 45-28 game, and there's 7.5 minutes left. And it's too much.
For them to try to come back.
Yeah.
And then to go back to the defensive injuries and everything like that, you can blame the coaching staff and the 12 men on the field for not calling timeout, but I think some of that might be because there's new players and the rotation of who's going on, who's coming off, like, you know what I mean? Was it Trevor Nowoski that was supposed to stay off the sideline? When he came in, was he supposed to tell somebody to get off? Like, this is all because maybe they have too many new players out there, guys that weren't playing that much, weren't expected to play that much this year, all of a sudden get thrown into the fire.
It just became too much to overcome. The defense had their problems for sure. Jared Goff didn't play his best game, nowhere near his best game. Let's just call it what it was. It was a bad game. And that's not going to help. You can't turn the ball over where and when he did. You know, the where was in your own zone. You throw a pick six. You can't have that pass. Not in that game. And then the when is at the end of the first half when you're in field goal range. You're looking to trim a 10-point deficit to a 7-point deficit to get within one score. And the interception in the end zone that Mikey Samuels still just baited him and made this great play. It's brutal, you know. And then there's another interception after that at the end of the game that it didn't really matter, but the fumble obviously mattered a lot. 248-539-9797 is a telephone number. We'll get to more calls and texts. We continue here on 97.1 The Ticket. Hey, great news. If you like the officiating in the game on Saturday night that didn't call for a roughing the quarterback penalty on the pick six.
The one that happened right in front of the referees, right, in front of everybody, because the ball is right there as well.
Right. That, or because it's a quarterback, because you're going to be paying attention. Or did you really love the face mask penalty? It wasn't a face mask penalty, but it was just simply getting the shoulder pads. So he worked on both teams. We object on that. If you really like those bad
the other one
calls,
seemed more obvious to me, though.
Yeah.
The golf one.
It was.
That was pretty.
But if you really like that, then you'll love that Ron Torbert gets to officiate the Super Bowl this year. He's the guy who officiated the game on Saturday night. Woo! Yay!
So we had a caller earlier say that, you know, if that was Patrick Mahomes that got hit, that there would have been a penalty called.
There would have been an arrest made.
Yes. He would be in jail. He'd be in Wayne County Jail or you know, Detroit. You know,
be forced to drive with that woman who was driving the Ohio State people in the golf cart.
Yeah, there'd be more than a penalty. That guy would be escorted out of the building in handcuffs.
Yes.
And by the way, there has already been a roughing the passer call against Patrick Mahomes for this weekend's game against the Bills.
It makes all the sense in the world.
They've already been docked.
That's how it works.
It's a rule.
We'll see. It's funny because it's totally warranted.
I mean, the Texans were pissed, man. Did you watch that post game?
They should be pissed.
They were like, we were playing everyone out there today.
Yeah.
They're like, they're walking right up to the line of not getting fined, but wanted
to
say like.
The defense, their special teams, the officials, the fans, everything.
Yeah.
Let's get back to the phones. Paul is in Clinton Township. Paul, welcome to 97.1 The Ticket. Hey, Paul.
Hey, guys, thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
Much appreciated.
Yeah, bet. Thank you.
You know, obviously, I mean, Goff didn't play well, okay? I think he's, you know, I think everybody knows that. But I personally, I've got a bigger problem myself if I'm, you know, as people were given their pie graph of blame. I give more to the offensive coordinator in terms of his game plan based on what the Lions do well, what Washington struggles with, and what was working early. The first thing I would say, whoever's decision it was, Jahmyr Gibbs should have started the game, not David Montgomery. Okay, if we're trying to, you know, at least in my opinion, Gibbs has been incredible. Montgomery's back, that's awesome, but Gibbs is the guy. He should have done that. Third and one, with a chance to go up 14-3, they run an empty backfield with Gibbs not even on the field, third and one, where to me, Washington's 30th against the run. You pound them at least twice. You get a first down. You go up 14-3. It's a different game. You're chewing more clock. You're keeping their quarterback off the field. They threw 40 passes in the game. The Lions have thrown 40 passes four times this year, and they've lost three of those football games. To me, that game was a running game with Gibbs, the offensive line, limit possessions, control clock. I thought Ben Johnson got too cute and was, I don't know, was he auditioning for Brady? Was he auditioning for somebody else?
I would say that this. Game, Paul, you know what they did? They played the same game to play all season long. They play an unpredictable offense. You don't know when they're going to throw it. You don't know when they're going to run it. We've seen them do the exact same thing on third and short in that area of the field, and they throw a touchdown pass. And that's what they were trying to do in this one. Unfortunately, the wide receiver stumbles out of the gate, and it ruins the rhythm of the play, and quarterback gets hit and fumbles it. Would I like to see them run the ball? Sure. I'm more conservative than most people are when it comes to that, or maybe I'm as conservative as people want to be in that situation, but this is how Ben Johnson's been calling games all season long. As far as Montgomery, it didn't bother me because I thought they were looking to get a lift from the fans as much as a lift from the team. For him to come back and play in that game, what he went through to get back, I think really means a lot to the team, and they appreciate that. And I think they were expecting to get an emotional lift out of it. Unfortunately, the first drive went three and out and it fizzled. Fortunately, it didn't matter because then the Lions bowed their neck and they got a fourth down stop against Washington, got the ball back, and then took six plays and scored. I understand your frustration on it, and you know, Dan Campbell said afterwards on that fumble play, you know, if they didn't get the pass completion, that they were looking to run it on fourth and one. They would have run the ball. But, you know, it was it a case of Ben Johnson getting too cute? I think it was just Ben Johnson being Ben Johnson.
Well, I would say this. They threw the third most passes they have all year, and they've lost three of those games. You had a guy averaging 7.5 yards a carry in the first half, and he
and then averaged
the
and then averaged one in the second half.
No, correct. So I sit there and I watched. Sometimes, and we've said that the running game is the strength of the team, and that they are able to do what they do off the pass. Right, Jared Goff. Jared Goff is a tremendous play-action pass guy, which was predicated off the run. I just felt they got away from it. I felt you wanted to keep that quarterback off the field as much as possible. And the way to do that is to run the football and grind them down. When you look at their statistics, what their defense does poorly, it's defend the run. I don't know. There's going to be no convincing of me personally that in the end was a great called game or game plan based on the game. Regardless of the mistakes the quarterback made, I just don't think it was a good, a well-called game. And listen, he's entitled to have them. He's had some spectacular ones. He, like Goff, did not give it to us in the biggest game, in my opinion, and it affected the team. What can I say?
All right, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. You know, as I'm looking at the last couple of drives, Jared Goff threw the ball like 17 times in the last two drives. So if you're going to look at this game and say, well, you threw the ball too many times in the game, you threw it 40 times, they threw it 17 the last two drives because they were down by three scores.
They had to score quickly. As fast as possible, yeah.
So, I mean, I think the game plan was to be balanced like they always are until you have to change up because of the score dictates that. When they get down 45-28, they have to find a way. And that's when they threw the ball a ton. They kicked the field goal. Now it's 45-31. They get the ball back, and they throw the ball a ton and ends up with an interception in the end zone to finish the game. I mean, that's just how it is. So if literally like 17 of the 40 passes happened in the last two drives, I think you can deduce that they were having a pretty equitable distribution between running and throwing the ball for the most part of the game. Now, he wanted the game plan to see more running, and I can totally understand that. And a lot of people, I don't even think that's hindsight. I think that's just their approach. I wouldn't have minded that. I thought that that's where the clear advantage was in the game because Washington's defense was not a very good run-stuffing defense, and they did run the ball quite effectively in the first half. And heck, they ended up with 200 yards rushing in the game. 61 of it comes on the one play from J-Mo, but yep, that's a running play, and we'll take it. And would they have been able to get more? And control the clock a little bit more, maybe. But you know, some of that is going to be hindsight, and some of that is first thought because that's what Paul would have done.
Yeah, but I also think things changed when, like, everyone. I understand them being upset about the third and one call where Goff fumbles, right? And they don't run the ball. But you're asking Ben Johnson to do something he hasn't done all year, which is be predictable and safe. Like he's unpredictable and he's not safe. He's aggressive, and I think people are bitching because it didn't work out the way they wanted it to. The Lions got a first down, you know, on that play, and Goff didn't fumble, and they go and score a touchdown, and they're up 14-3. Maybe the rest of the game plan is run the ball, right? Yeah, grind it out as much as possible. Use a bunch of clock, but that's not what happened. What happened was Goff fumbled. The Commanders go down and score, and then things kind of changed a little bit. And maybe Ben did press a little bit, but I think he saw what was going on the defensive side. They weren't stopping the Commanders at all.
No, I mean, it was like I said, those few plays there, the fourth and two, 12 men on the field on that, it's a killer. And then right away, you've got the Jameson Williams interception, the bad pass he makes. And that's, you go from being down three to being down, you know, 17 like that, or whatever the math is on that. But it was brutal. It was absolutely brutal. And that's how the season ends. And that's unfortunate because it was a hell of a season. This was a team that we thought was going to be a Super Bowl contending team. And unfortunately for them, the defense just wasn't there because of all the injuries. I forget who said it. I want to give credit to it, but I don't know who it was. I've seen a million things on Twitter, and this was over the weekend. One of the beat writers, I think, said it. And that was, it's hard to run next man up when you run out of men. And that's kind of what happened with this team. It was next man up when Hutch went out. It was next man up when Davenport gets out. Next man up when Ali McNeil goes out. Next man up when Mekhi Wingo goes out. Next man up when you lose Carlton Davis. My God, that's a lot of next man up. Next man up when Derek Barnes goes out. Next man up when Malcolm Rodriguez goes out. None of these guys came back to play. It was next man up when Alex Anzalone went out. And thank God Alex Anzalone came back. But that's the only guy who was able to come back from all this. Next man up when Emmanuel Mosley goes out. Next man up when Ennis Rakestra doesn't play.
Khalil Dorsey
goes out, right? It's next man up. And then you get to the game on Saturday night, and it's next man up again when Amik Robertson gets hurt. And the next man up again when Melifonwu goes out.
Next man up was Morris Norris, who had played like two snaps this year.
If you look, like, you know, baseball, they got the wins above replacement statistic, which basically involves a fictional player that you put your stats against that fictional player and how much better you are than what that replacement player would be. That's how you get wins above replacement. It's this weird mathematical formula that nobody really understands. If you were to do something similar to that with the Lions, I mean, every player on the Lions, their WAR would be massive. Because look who the next man up is. It's incredible. Because they're constantly pulling guys up from the practice squad. And they're out, and they're performing above their heads in some cases. But that's the disappointing part, is that we never got to enjoy fully what this well-oiled machine should look like. We saw it offensively all year long. Fortunately, the injuries that happened on the offensive side of the ball were temporary. We didn't lose guys for more than a few games at a time. Players play banged up all the time, for sure. We know this, right? Ragnow is a day-to-day player. Gets rest during the week because of practice because he's got injuries. We know this. Taylor Decker, same thing. They had injuries to some offensive linemen. You know, Zeitler was out. But nobody ever missed like more than three games at a stretch. They were able to get back at it. You know, Montgomery goes out for three regular season games, right? Jahmyr Gibbs flourishes. Montgomery comes back for the playoff game. But defensively, I listed a bunch of guys that didn't come back. Everybody gets hurt like in the first 6 weeks of the season, and then you lose a couple more guys after that. And then, unfortunately, in the biggest game of the year, wow. It's hard not to say that was just too much. And then on top of that, the quarterback isn't having a good day. Was that because he was potentially concussed, or was it just because he was just not having... I'm not going to go in the concussion thing. I think he just had a bad day, and it's really unfortunate because it changes the narrative for some people. He's the guy. This team just wasn't healthy enough to be the team that could be the buzzsaw of the NFL like we've seen them be the buzzsaw. 248-539-9797. This is 97.1 The Ticket. Congratulations to the Pistons winning yesterday. It's a nice win for them. See if they can continue their get back on a winning streak. It'd be nice. Red Wings play tonight against Philadelphia. Let's hope that they can erase the bad taste in the mouth in the last couple of games. Elmer Soderblom being brought back up. First time in a while that the big fella's on the team. Was skating this morning with Rasmussen and Fisher. It's a big line when you get... Soderblom is 6'8", and Rasmussen is like 6'6". I forget what Fisher is. I think he's big too, 6'2", 6'1", something like that. So it'll be interesting to see how they play together. Although, don't expect Soderblom to be a big bruising forward. That's not his style, but have anybody that size is going to be fun to watch. We saw him in training camp a couple of years ago when he got a chance to play in the exhibition season, and he just stood out. Like, that guy's huge. And he's had some steady progress at Grand Rapids and deserved to be called up, and we'll see how he does. Lions, meanwhile, that's still top of mind right now, what's going on. They're going to have some changes, obviously. Ben Johnson, the offensive coordinator, taking the job with the Chicago Bears. Looks like Aaron Glenn is going to be interviewed today. Gets another interview with the Jets. Reports out in New York are that they don't want to let him go. They'd like him to stay in New York and sign a contract, be the next head coach of the New York Jets. The New Orleans Saints have canceled, or I shouldn't say canceled, they've rescheduled their interviews with candidates for later in the week because they're dealing with something that they don't deal with, and that's snow. Some interesting pictures what's happening in Louisiana right now. You look at the LSU stadium, it's all covered in snow, and they got some pictures of people on the field with an LSU helmet, and there's like, oh, look at all this snow. Yeah, it's a few inches of snow. It's January. Here in Detroit, we're kind of used to it. Anywhere in the Midwest, we're all used to snow, but they're not down there, so it's kind of a thing. And what's a serious thing we're dealing with is how cold it's going to be tonight. So please, please, please bring your pets inside. Be kind to others that are less fortunate if you can. And I hope that those that are less fortunate can find some shelter and know where those shelters are, because it's going to be ridiculously cold with the wind chills expected to be anywhere from minus 20 to minus 30 overnight. I mean, as early as 6 o'clock in the morning, tomorrow morning, it's still supposed to be like 30 degrees below zero with the wind chill. So please be kind out there. 248-539-9797 is the telephone number. Kevin is next up here, 97 on the ticket. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, how are you guys doing today?
All right, Kev, you?
Doing all right. You know, I'm sitting on hold here on my lunch break, listening to these callers come in. You guys are doing a great show, by the way. And Paul gets on the phone and he steals like the first 2 points that I was going to make.
Okay.
So I'm not going to repeat it, but, you know, beyond, you said they got away with going three and out because they got the ball back and end up scoring first. I think that's right. But the game itself, this was going to be a track meet, just like we knew the Buffalo game was going to be a track meet. Any team gets a 2-score lead. Now you only have to trade scores. That's what the mindset should have been going in, and they should have come out more aggressive right from the beginning. And from now on, any game the Lions play where Monty and Gibbs are both on the roster, the defense is going to be happy whenever Monty's on the field, at least happier than when Gibbs is on the field. We know that's the case now. Okay. Still love Monty. Still has a great contribution.
Why do you say because they went three and out in the first drive of the game? Now it's a moratorium on handing the ball off to Montgomery.
No, I'm saying that he's coming back from an injury. You got a guy who's hot, and then went through the defense like Swiss cheese for the next two drives until you took him out of the game, and then ended up third and one. And the problem on that third and one play in the red zone isn't that they didn't hand the ball off. It's that they went empty in the backfield, and that takes away the threat of the run. It lets the rushers know they can come after the quarterback.
Yeah, but that's why it was supposed to be a real quick pass, because they were going to let the rushers come in, and then the receiver stumbles out of the gate, and it throws off the rhythm, and then he got hit.
I got it, Gator, but go back to why did they lose Tampa Bay? You go back and you look at the film. They didn't score in the red zone. And you go back and watch play-by-play of how many times they went empty in the backfield in that game in the red zone. And it never worked. And it's not a good strategy for a team that's built with a play-action quarterback, a massive offensive line. You know what? In the middle of the field, when you have the running back out there and you move him out, I'm all for it. In the red zone, you are playing into the defense's hands by going empty in the backfield with a quarterback who doesn't run.
All right, but thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Except this is the offense they've had all season long. We've seen them do the exact same thing. Empty backfield, third and short, and they throw a touchdown pass. That's what they do. They're unpredictable. You don't know. I mean, like Kang said earlier, if you line up in the I formation on third and short, I think the defense knows you're going to run the football. And not that it's the wrong thing to do, but it's also not the wrong thing to do when you're going to throw the ball on third and short with an empty backfield, because you don't know what's coming with this offense. And they've been successful doing it both ways. That's what's made it great. Now, here's factual what happened in the game with David Montgomery. In the first half, he carried it 4 times for 4 yards. No good. Jahmyr Gibbs carried it 9 times for 96 yards. Awesome. So in the second half, Jahmyr Gibbs carried it 5 times for 9 yards. Not good. David Montgomery carried it 3 times for 24 yards. Much better. These guys are complementary backs, and it wasn't this massive disparity. Gibbs carried it 14 times. Montgomery carried it 7. It's a 2-to-1 ratio in favor of the guy who's the home run hitter. I don't think there was a problem with handing the ball off to David Montgomery too much. The first series of the game, he carries it twice. They don't go anywhere. They go 3 and out, and okay, that sucks, right? But the defense did their job, and the Lions get the ball back and score in 6 plays.
I'm trying to give people their time right now. Everyone's all up in their feelings, and I get it, man.
Yep.
You know, it was a crappy loss, kind of gutting. Didn't expect it. And so I think people are kind of emotional, right, to say the least.
Sure. I mean, I can be a little emotional.
And I feel like that's what that last caller was. I think he forgot what Montgomery brought to this team. And, of course, he's not 100% healthy. Not many people are at this time of year. But next year, they're going to go back, and maybe Gibbs gets more carries than Monty, and that's fine because he's clearly more explosive back,
mm-hmm.
and you saw what he can do when he's the lead back by himself. But they complement each other.
They absolutely
complement. It's Sonic and Knuckles, man, and that wasn't the problem. I think the problem was they got behind and had to throw the ball more in the second half, you know? And like I said, everyone knows Gibbs is more the explosive back. He's going to get his touches. He's going to get the ball in space. They're going to try to get explosive plays out of Gibbs. And Monty is going to, you know, soften up the middle, and they're going to get short yardage with him and goal line. It didn't work out, man. The Commanders were the better team Saturday night. And I know people are looking for reasons why, you and I have given our reasons why. So I'm going to let people vent. I'm going to let people do their thing this week.
Last year, David Montgomery had just over 1,100 yards in offense and had 13 touchdowns. This year, David Montgomery had just over 1,100 yards in offense, and he had 12 touchdowns. Both seasons were 14-game seasons for David Montgomery. He's great for this team. He's awesome for this team. And so is Jahmyr Gibbs. And yeah, Jahmyr Gibbs is probably more of the lead back who's going to get the carries when you need explosive plays. He's the guy. But when you're going to try to grind a team down, that's when David Montgomery comes in. They're a wonderful compliment, and I'm glad that they have this. And when we go back a couple of years ago, and Jamal Williams was a free agent, and the Lions let him go, and people were like, how can you let that go? Look at all that production. There goes our 1,000-yard rusher we've been begging for since Barry left. What are you going to do? And there go all these touchdowns, whatever, he had 18, 19 touchdowns that year. How do you replace that? Well, they replaced it just fine. They went out and got David Montgomery, who's effectively Jamal Williams, but better. And then they went out and drafted Jahmyr Gibbs, who's a game changer. They handled it just fine. And the 32 touchdowns I think that these guys had combined this year, it's okay. They knew how to work it. Now, again, it can be hindsight with a lot of people when you look at third and short. Just hand it off. Just hand it off. Or do you trust the offensive coordinator that has had this record-setting offense to go ahead and call the game he's going to call? It wasn't a bad call to do what they were trying to do on third and short with the empty backfield. It was a bad result that started, as they said, with a bad chain of events with the receiver stumbling out of the gate. So now he's off rhythm and he's not there. And if you're going to allow for the defense to come in, because that's what the play is designed for, and you have to hang on to it for an extra tick, that's trouble. And that's what happened. He got hit, he fumbled, and he lost the fumble for the first time this season. Bad ending to a play that was designed to have run a million times, and it's worked. It's unfortunate. 248-539-9797 is the telephone number. Same number to text. More of your calls and texts as we continue here on 97.1 The Ticket.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how.
Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Jeffrey Dahmer, Ted Bundy, the Night Stalker. These names are infamous, but do you really know what drove them to kill?
In Mind of a Serial Killer, we don't just tell you the story, we break down the psychology behind it.
Follow and listen to Mind of a Serial Killer, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's get right back to the phones. John is in Southfield. John, you're next up here, 97 on the ticket. Hey, John. John?
Hello?
Hey, you all right?
Hey, how you doing?
All right. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good.
Okay.
What I did want to say about the Lions, the game the other night, basically, they got into a position where they were playing from behind too much, and basically, early in the season and maybe a little bit throughout when they were winning, the defense was always able to at least stabilize the game so that the offense could flourish. And I felt like the other night, it just they weren't in a position for that to happen. And turnovers put them in a hole, and the defense just let that hole get even deeper. So it's like they kind of needed both sides, and both sides kind of came up short.
Yeah, it was not a good game for the Lions, without question. And I don't think there's any shame in saying that Washington was the better team. They didn't get jobbed by the officials, even though the there was no flag thrown on the hit on Goff on the pick six return. Outside of that, do you want to complain about the interference call in the end zone? I suppose you could a little bit, but the Lions got a break too. It was a face mask penalty called against Washington that was not a face mask. The Lions shot themselves in the foot by – they got called for 12 men on the field. They should have called the timeout, and they didn't do it. It was not a good day for the Lions. Right. Offensively, defensively, coaching-wise, not good all around.
Yeah, I felt like some of the mistakes they made is mistakes they should have made during the season. You can't make those mistakes in the playoffs because during the season you got 17 tomorrows.
Yeah.
You don't have any tomorrows in the playoffs.
Yeah, I hear you, man. And thanks for the call, John. I appreciate it. I mean, the interception Goff threw that was returned for the touchdown, that's a pass that I'm sure is going to haunt Jared Goff for a while. Having a ball sail on you is not good. And when it sails on you and you're in a controlled environment like Ford Field, when you're indoors, you shouldn't see plays like that. And you did. And it was unfortunate. And then the interception at the end of the first half, it's a throw that you can't make. You can't make that throw, have it picked off. Unless maybe it was just an absolutely ridiculously spectacular play by Sainristal, which I don't think was the case. I think he was baited, and I think he knew exactly
That throw seemed either late, or was Jamo supposed to cut that route off a little shorter instead of going,
Or do you, loft it up in the air a little bit more and move it? I mean,
it was a killer because it was points at the end of the half.
Because you either you're trying the one thing you the two things you can't do on that play, you can't turn it over via fumble or interception, and you can't take a sack. Although with Jake Bates, maybe you're fine taking a sack because if it's an 8 yard loss, okay, then you're still 55 yard field goal and that's within his range. But point is that was a makeable field goal at the very least is what they should have had going for them. And instead, it ends up being no points. They didn't cut it to one score. And Washington was getting the ball to start the second half.
And the real question is, Gator, is that a burp or a fart?
The guy just had?
Yeah, I think it was
a burp.
Okay, all right. Or is it, you know, something
that
even worse?
It didn't sound like flatulence. It sounded like it was gastrointestinal coming up through the esophageal region and then just, you know, expelling out into the universe without him knowing that he was on the air when it happened.
Okay. Just want to make sure.
Thank you.
And then, yeah, real quick, like to his point, though, went to the call after he did whatever he did. Dan Campbell said it right. The offense and defense just didn't complement each other ever. No. When one got a stop, they didn't get a score. They turned it over. Or when they turned it over, the defense couldn't get a stop. You know, it was just...
The only time it happened was the first drive
of the
game. The
very beginning.
The first drive of the game for Washington. They got the stop.
Yep.
And then they marched down in sixth place.
After that, it never complimented each other. Ever.
Nope. And can't have that. Michael's next up here, 97 on the ticket. Hey, Michael.
Good afternoon, fellas. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
Hey, you know, I've been sitting here listening to everybody just kind of rip on the game plan, rip on Jared Goff and all that. And part of me yesterday was trying to think, how does Dan Campbell spin this so it's not the same old Lions mantra? Like, we blew the NFC title game last year. Obviously, the guys didn't come out prepared this year. But part of me is thinking, you know, how does Dan Campbell grow? Where do you think the next step in growth for Dan is going to be to try to motivate these guys for next year? Because it seemed like everything was lined up for this year. Even with all the bad stuff that happened, with all the injuries going down on the defense, and just the fact that we won 15 games with a subpar defense that half the league couldn't do. I would say a quarter of the league is not going to be able to do what the Lions did this year, having the key guys go out on their defensive side. You know, that is just – I'm looking for –
I don't think he has to do anything different. I honestly think, Michael, the difference in what happens is the injuries in large part. It's one thing to lose a superstar player for the season. It's another to lose seven starters on your defense for the season and expect them to be competitive. And like I said earlier in the show, I thought it was like Jenga. And thanks for the call. I appreciate it. It's like Jenga. They keep pulling pieces out. Here we'll pull out the Hutchinson beat. We'll pull out the piece for it's Ali McNeil. You know, here goes Marcus Davenport and Carlton Davis. And you keep pulling pieces and Derek Barnes and Malcolm Rodriguez. And here's another piece. And we're going to pull out the Alex Anzalone piece. We'll put it back in later. But, you know, we're going to pull it out temporarily. And then there goes Emmanuel Mosley. And there goes Ennis Rakestraw and, you know, and Wingo and Kaminsky. I mean, it didn't stop. And you got this shaky foundation of a defense that's left that was good enough to beat Minnesota the last game of the season. Amik Robertson did an amazing job defensively in that game against Minnesota. I thought, and the reason I was chesty about this game going into last week was because Robertson showed that he can cover the guy on the edge. So you want to match him up against Terry McLaurin? I like the matchup. I think McLaurin's an outstanding and way underrated receiver. I think he's great. But I like Amik Robertson on him. He's game. He's up for the task. Let's see it. And that means that Melon Fama gets to play at starting safety. And he's a playmaker. He's a hard hitter. I like it. That moves Brian Branch into the slot. I'm here for it. Let's go. LFG. I like it. And then the second play on defense, Amik Robertson breaks his arm. And you pulled another piece of the Jenga piece out. And now that tower is shaking. It's going to fall at any second. And then you get to the second half and Melifonwu gets hurt and you pull another piece out and it all comes down. How do you overcome all that? And on top of that, your quarterback isn't playing to his level. Now, the offense, as people pointed out, despite all the turnovers, they did score 31 points. The defense, despite all the injuries and mistakes, they give up 38 points. It's too many, but you know, we talk about the Buffalo game. That was a more disparate between the offense and defense there. And they go over 48 points or something like that to Buffalo? 46, whatever it was. I mean, it's a lot to overcome. So moving forward, what do they got to do? I don't know. Stay healthy? Is that possible?
Not break each other's limbs?
Right. Let's stop running into each other and knocking each other out for the season.
Sorry, Gator.
It's all right, Rico. How are you doing?
We were talking about the weird flexes that were some Michigan fans last night. So we were trying to see if this billboard was real that was up.
Yeah, I don't know. I just know Ohio State won the game. They're national champions.
I know.
Big Ten gets back-to-back national championships.
And then, we're talking about the question that I really want to know, which was worse, this game against the Commanders or losing to San Francisco? Which hurts more? Mike and I are totally opposite on this.
I mean, it's a solid debate because obviously last year, losing to San Francisco with a 17-point lead at halftime, chance to go to the Super Bowl, that hurts. Losing this one with a chance to host an NFC Championship game,
right there,
that hurts a lot. And it stings.
Higher expectations were this year. Last year was house money.
I don't know if last year was house money, but
it wasn't expected. This year, it was expected.
Well, until you saw the injuries mount up on defense, and then obviously things got out of hand. But look forward to hearing it next. Mike and Rico, 97 on the ticket.